Mr. A here, saying, how y'all doing?
Yo! Are you ready to rumble? Or should I say tumble? Cause I don't stumble or fumble like a cracker by a gumball. Standing on the ground, flat feet, firm, coming bombs and drums, and I'm doing it on my terms.
Welcome to the Rumble. We are back and better than ever, helping you stay ready so you don't have to get ready. We don't want you sucker punched, so we are here each and every week helping you keep your guard up. I am Jeremy Lavelle at Claims Coach on Instagram and TikTok, and they just call me the mouth of the South. And alongside of me is the Catastrophe Queen, the Claims Dame herself, Miss Jessica Odell. And as always, the magnanimously magical, the mesmerizingly meticulous, the one, the only, Baby Cakes, Miss Donna Lavelle. How is everybody doing today?
Good. Fantastic.
Wow.
Fantastic.
I mean, it's such a gorgeous day. It was beautiful.
I was outside most of the day. I really liked it. Yeah. I went out and looked at a lightning strike, which was very interesting. We're supposed to have, actually, Texas is supposed to see some more weather this weekend.
Yes, I'm not looking forward to it.
Gross.
And I had an interesting lunch, and this is just a fun fact about him before we get into the actual legitimate fun facts. This guy that I had lunch with, who is also a contractor, is a trained spotter.
A what?
A trained spotter. So when they report hail size,
mm-hmm.
to the ground, okay. So when they report the hail size, he's one of those that is a trained spotter that knows the different sizes of hail.
Oh.
And he also knows how to spot rotations and how they communicate. So they all communicate basically via ham radio, and they'll call out. So the National Weather Service will call out. It was a really, really interesting conversation that I had with the guy, and how all of that is done and how the radars work and all that stuff. So there's my fun fact. But speaking of which, would you happen to have any fun facts?
I do have some fun facts. Fun Facts with Baby Cakes is brought to you by Inc., the best way to get paid after a property claim. Inc. Save time, get paid. What?
That was really good.
You're looking at me like.
Sorry.
Okay. Did you know that the song "You're So Vain" by Carly Simon was written about Warren Beatty?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So was that song actually written about him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So that's the reason he's so vain.
No, he's vain before that.
Oh. But she says, you know, you're so vain because you probably think this song is about
you.
I bet you think the song is about you.
Yeah. So, well, excuse me. I messed the lyrics up there. I am no Carly Simon. But so it turns out it was about him.
Okay. Moving on. The Rick James song "Cold Blooded" was written about Linda Blair from The Exorcist.
Really?
They dated. Did you know that?
Oh, so it wasn't because of the movie.
No,
it's just what he thought of her in general.
Oh, wow! For a song about you.
Isn't that a fun fact?
The Aerosmith song "Dude Looks Like a Lady" was written about Vince Neil of Motley Crue.
Wow. Not wrong.
Now Vince looks like
it's a little
someone's
of the,
aunt.
The pot calling the kettle black there. I mean, have you seen Steven Tyler lately?
He doesn't look like a lady.
Fair enough.
Ugh. Okay.
It's not due to lack of makeup though. So
So the Peter Gabriel song "In Your Eyes" was written about Rosanna Arquette.
Oh, okay.
"You Ought to Know" by Alanis Morissette was written about Dave Coulier of Full House.
Full House.
I still can't believe that.
Cut it out.
You sounded like him. "Spider Webs" by No Doubt or Gwen Stefani. Was written about Liam Gallagher of Oasis.
Ah.
That's all I have. Now you know, knowing is half the bullshit.
There we go. I am so glad that I have those fun facts rattling around, taking up actual hard drive space in my brain. I'm so much better for it. Guys, we have got an incredible show. It is going to come to you in three separate rounds. When you hear this sound, you know that the round has begun. And when you hear this sound, you know that the round is over. Now, I want to remind you that we are not debating. We are merely discussing all of the hardships and all of the things that you guys are rumbling with each and every day. This is going to be a really fun one because coming at you next is the good, the bad, and the ugly. And round one starts right after this. Public adjusters, listen up. It's Jeremy Lavelle, owner of Remedy Claims Consulting, host of The Rumble, and most importantly, your claims coach. Public adjuster training is one of the hardest things to find. Sure, you can take some online seminars, you can show up to conferences, but none of them tailor training just for you until now. Whether you need to learn how to estimate, scope, negotiate, or prospect, I can help you drill down on the skills you want to develop. Maybe you're just starting out and you need to learn the claims process from A to Z, or you're just wanting help on strategy on a specific claim. I can help you find the traction you were looking for and learn how to truly control the narrative in the ever-changing world of claims. You can reach out to me directly at 888-596-8772, or you can find me on the web at remedyclaims.com and just click Get Started. That's 888-596-8772 or remedyclaims.com and click Get Started. You can even shoot me an email at jeremy@remedyclaims.com. That's Jeremy at remedyclaims.com. It's time to move your career to the next level. Round one, the good about being a PA or working claims or however you want to put it. So, yes, the show is all about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so in round one, we're going to go into the good. And I think I am just going to bounce past this right over to Miss Jess. Okay. So what's the good thing about being a PA? Because you're doing a lot more PA work as of recently. So
yeah, I would say flexibility is one of those good things. I mean, you have a flexibility in your schedule. Sometimes you're busy. Sometimes you get a little bit of a lull. You know, you can go chase a hurricane, team up with some folks that may need some surge help. And then, you know, when the hurricane's over, you guys go back to just normal. You know, you can manage your workload. You know, you're not tied to a desk from 8 to 5 every single day. That's definitely one.
I completely agree with that. I don't think I had thought of that so much. That thing is so good. I almost mm-hmm. take it for granted. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that is just something. And I think Donna can probably really relate to this as of the last week or so, because Donna started.
I just started a job.
Donna went out and got a real job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a haircut and got a real job.
You did. So you can relate. I mean, I think probably better than any of us could right now. The ability to just not. If you want to work whenever you work, you know what I'm saying? And I guess not to jump ahead rounds, but, you know, kind of when you work from home, you get to work from home. But mm-hmm. anytime you're at home, you're also at work.
Right.
And so,
or you can work from anywhere. That's also part of the flexibility. Well,
and it sort of has skill set will travel. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I can really do most of what I do from just about anywhere. And if technology gets too much better, do you know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? I mean, uh-huh. I'm looking for real-time aerial footage at some point in time where we'll be able to get real-time aerial. Now, I know that's probably some Privacy Act stuff that's going to come into play. But wouldn't it be cool if you could just task one of the drone services to do a quick little flyby in the uh-huh. area, and they just drone by and you take a look at the property? I mean, I'm saying that that's probably going to be more likely as technology progresses. But you're right, Jess. Basically, all you need is to just be able to crack open that laptop, mm-hmm. right? And you can do just about anything you need to do from anywhere in the world.
Yep. And then another one would be your income potential. What I love about being a PA is you're not capped. I mean, you might be kind of restricted. You know, there may not be a lot going on. Maybe you don't have a storm. Maybe this, that, and the other. I mean, there's lots of things that could reduce your income potential. But at the same time, it's sky's the limit. You can get licensed in different states. You can partner with other folks. Like if somebody says, I just want to do the field part, I want somebody else to do the desk stuff for me. Okay, fine. Okay. And some PAs are fractional PAs, right? So they may not be only working for one firm. Maybe they do estimating for this company over here, but then they do field work for this company over there. I mean, their income potential is kind of limitless. Whereas, you know, no matter how hard you work in a 9-to-5, you typically have that salary and that's it. So I think that's pretty cool.
Well, I've got my own list here. And so, I'm going to go twice. but I think the income potential is really good, but I think it should come with some warning labels.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I really think it should have some
learn warning. How to budget.
Yeah. Right. Yes. You're going to have, there's some warning labels that come with that, you know? And I could really kind of go to seed on that, but I want to stay in the good light here. Yeah. You know what I mean? I really do. Because it is so much fun. I will never forget the first claim where, Baby Cakes and I got a windfall of money, like a year's worth of money. Yeah. you know what I'm saying? Like a year's worth of money. Just boom, right there in our laps, you know, and kind of how it really changes your perspective on the world at large. Do you know what I'm saying? And how you really kind of approach things. And that's why I tell you it should come with a warning label, because if you're smart with it when you get it, especially those windfalls, man, I can't tell you, you're operating from a position of leverage. And so when you care and protect that windfall, and you have like, and I almost want to look at it like I got lucky and my nest egg was funded, you know, right. My rainy day fund was funded, you know, and that's really kind of what it feels like. And so then you try to go earn on top of that. And it's really quite motivating. And I love that you have the opportunity to happen. You're not going to get that in a 9-to-5 job. You know what I mean? I mean, aside from corporate bonuses, if you're high up, I guess you can get those windfalls, but as a self-employed kind of guy, you know, I mean, that's an interesting thing. I've got one that I think is the really good thing about being a PA, you know, as easy it is to get a license, the job itself will weed out the people who aren't supposed to be here. You know what I mean?
That's a good one.
You know, I kind of like that. It's sort of this self, you know, regulating profession. Now, I'm not to say that there's not some bad PAs and some really good PAs. And I mean, we will run the entire gamut. But I remember specifically coaching one, not that she was a bad PA. I think she was going to make a great PA. But it was difficult kind of getting out of the gates, finding that first sort of rash of claims for you to go work. You know what I mean? And she got really frustrated. And then she also got really, really frustrated with the insurance carrier.
Right.
When they didn't, you know, when they were doing one of those business decision things, Jess. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
And I really like that the profession kind of, it's like, it is not for the faint of heart.
Right.
Because if you are faint of heart, you will be exposed. And I kind of like that it's sort of this self-regulating profession like that. Not that we, you know, all could use a lesson in ethics here and there. And please don't misunderstand me. But it kind of weeds out the people who are not going to be able to properly handle the claim, just kind of in and of itself. Another thing that I really, really like about this is It's one of those businesses that if you do it right, there is an incredible amount of talent out there, and you can build, you know, a multi-million dollar business without just a whole lot of overhead.
Sure.
Do you understand? I don't know how else you go out and build that you could absolutely bootstrap if you were smart with your money, now understand, and I'm not saying you can do it in 1 year or 2 years or anything like that, but I'm saying it is a scalable business, assuming that you're smart with how you handle your money, you know, and you can turn it into something with incredibly, if you think about this, incredibly low liability, you know, very little overhead other than maybe your tech stack and some tools, right?
Right.
So you've got very low overhead, can be run virtually, so you don't have any sort of real estate overhead that you would have to manage. Nothing wrong with getting an office if that's the way you want to run it and that's the way you want to do it, have people come in and support staff like that. Absolutely. But
yeah, I think it's also state dependent, I think.
Yeah. Well,
some states.
You still have to have a service address, but with some of these smaller sort of, you know, shared workspaces, you know, yeah, you can use that as a service address really easy. So you can severely reduce your real estate overhead. There is another thing that I like about is that you can do it with almost no marketing budget whatsoever, because none of your competition is marketing. So any of the social media stuff that you do, any kind of money that you dump into it like that is probably going to yield a very solid return. And I don't know too many other businesses that you could do that with without significant risk and significant investment. So those are my goods. You know what I mean? And I think from whatever sort of entrepreneurial journey you're on, whether you just merely want to be self-employed, and I respect the hell out of that, you know, or you want to start a business, this thing can really fit either one of those goals. And it's hard to find that.
The other thing I love is the variety of claims, and no job is the same. Every job is different. You got to investigate. It's if you're an investigative type of person, this is great because no claim is exactly the same.
And think about this and you can still even specialize. You know what I mean? Like you can get downright specialized on what you want to do, whether it's fire or water, or maybe you're just really good at roofs and that sort of improving some of that stuff out. And I would encourage any public adjusters to pick an area. Now, it's not to say that you wouldn't work other claims, but if you pick an area of expertise and then you basically invest in that thing, I know every time we've invested sort of in a sort of focus, it has always paid itself back really, really quickly. You know, I know that when we bought the Matterport camera, we didn't even have it a year before it completely, you know,
paid for itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was like the third job we had paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. I think when you have the ability to specialize, you can make really good money in that area, but you can also service the other claims. And so I think the variety and the ability to kind of focus in and specialize on something, that's incredibly good too. I would like to point out this one other sort of financial aspect of public adjusting. It's recession proof.
Yeah. Yep. Hurricanes are going to happen. Tornadoes are going to happen. Hail gonna fall from the sky. And
generally, the rougher the economy is, the better off we really kind of benefit from sort of that climate, because one, prices generally go up, okay, and we're paid off a percentage of the value of the claim, right? So you have labor costs and material costs, they sort of go up when it's tough. But even when we're in a good space economically, we are able to provide these services that we would not ordinarily provide, and people are a lot more open into looking into it. So, I mean, I think that's another really good thing I like about it, is that it is completely and totally recession proof. It was pandemic
proof. Yeah, I was going to say it was pandemic proof.
It was pandemic proof.
I think the ultimate good, and I think it's a lot of us for, it's our why. Why are we doing this? The good part is helping people. We talked about that. Like that's the ultimate, the icing on the cake. All these other things are great, but helping people.
Again, with I want to help people should come with a warning label.
Warning label.
That should come with a warning label. And so we'll get into that in a little bit.
We'll get into that.
We will absolutely get into that. But there are so many really good things about being able to be a PA. And I think that there is one of the things I was talking with Donna about before we came up to record the show was there's all of these different skill sets. Do you know what I'm saying? That when you were talking about being able to be like a fractional PA, I'm going to tell you one of the most sought after skill sets that I would look for in any public adjuster. And I'm going to tell you the number one, it's not estimating. It's not ability to scope. It's written skills. If you can write, man, I mean, and so if you're looking to separate yourself, learn how to write.
Like a well-formed argument and counter argument, those types of things.
Like yes. The final 100%. Demand. You know, next time we come through your area and Jess is able to be with us, she will always teach the final demand portion of Control the Narrative. And it is a very thorough understanding of what you're doing. But what we can't give you, always is you know, the verbal skills that it takes to actually pull that off with any level of success. But if you can hone those, and I remember, I mean, it's not like I went to, you know, claim writing school where they taught me good verbal skills. I read engineers' reports and how they were phrased and arranged. You know what I mean? Even though what they say is absolute complete bullshit for the most part, the words that they use and the way that they put their phrases together and organize their reports is actually really good. You could learn a lot by just reading engineer reports. Instead of the wind blew it over, it was deflected by wind. Roofs don't have holes in them. They have perforations. Those kinds of things that
storm really created openings.
Yeah, exactly. And so... Again, so many really good things about being a PA. As you might guess, round two is coming up right after this, and we're going to get into the bad.
One of the most difficult claims you can work is a contents claim. It requires extreme detail and significant documentation. Ricky McGregor with Monarch Claim Services is the expert you need on your side. She will handle on-site evaluation, inventory, photo documentation, pricing, and overall contents claim organization. She will work with your team beginning to end so you can focus on the rest of the claim. Do your client a favor and call Ricky McGregor with Monarch Claim Services. You can reach her at 515-783-1434. That's 515-783-1434 or find her on the web at monarchclaimservices.com.
Round one, the bad part about working. Round two, the bad part about working claims. I'm an editing nightmare right now.
I'm not editing any of this out.
Bloopers.
God. Round two, the bad. So bad.
What you got?
I feel like I've talked a lot, and so I'm going to go ahead and hand it back to you. What is the bad for you?
One of the bads I would say is the emotional toll. What I mean by the emotional toll is, especially after disaster, I mean, these people, by the time a client comes to you, they've already tried going through their insurance company 9 times out of 10. They've already been denied this or delayed that or whatever. They're ready for a swift resolution. They come to you and then you have to explain. You still have to give the carrier their timelines, right? Based on the statutes. It's not going to be a quick fix. It's still going to be a lot of back and forth and negotiations, et cetera. And then we still may not come out, you know, with a favorable outcome. It's when you get that, especially in hurricane situations where you may handle 300 claims. That's 300 people who have been completely displaced, their homes destroyed, and the carrier might pay $2,000 out of pocket. Like what? I mean, so they're mad. You're mad at the carriers. Everybody's just mad. And then, you know, months down the road when the settlement comes in, and then all of a sudden everybody's happy. But that middle part's rough.
I could not agree more. God. Have you... I would think that being angry takes more energy than being happy, right? You know what I'm saying? I'm not real sure about that, but I think that in some situations, I think being angry is way more energy. But anytime I am out of sorts, I'm frustrated. Of course, you know, I don't know if it's sometimes I don't feel like I have the energy to be anything but mad. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just don't have the level of putting up with the shit that's around me.
Yeah.
Kind of attitude, you know? And when you're dealing with people, I remember really one of the very first claims I ever walked up on. And I'm going to use her name. Her name is Pamela Torrell. And I was an independent adjuster at the time. And when I pulled up to the house, I noticed there was this older gentleman that was standing on a tree that had fallen on the left elevation of the home. And he had a chainsaw in his hand and he was working it for everything that he had. But it's like going at the ocean with a bucket, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, and I commend him for doing that. And Pamela Torrell yelled out, I pulled up in the driveway in the front yard, extended, you know, kind of away from my car. And she was standing on the other side of the yard and she goes, "Are you with the insurance company?" And I said, "Yes." And she just fell apart and she ran over and she hugged me. She was so glad that I was there. And whether you're a public adjuster or an independent adjuster, people are depending on you.
That's right.
To have a whole lot of answers to a lot of really hard questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest question that I think I got, the hardest question that I always have to answer for anybody is, what are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is a very hard place to be in, because they're looking squarely at you at answers, and a shrug of the shoulders and I don't know, or a you'll be fine kind of tap on the shoulder, Bubba, that doesn't cut it. Right. And so we've got to reach down, and so much about what we do, whether you're an independent adjuster, staff adjuster, public adjuster, contractor, if you're going to choose to show up in the middle of the tragedy, you better bring your damn compassion with you. You know, and if you're signing on to deal with people in the middle of tragedies, you better go find out and make sure that your tank of compassion is completely full anytime you walk up to them. Don't do them the disservice about being an asshole because you got problems too.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't about you. And so one of the and understand, that's one of the bad things about doing this job is that you really have to kind of take your current situation and put it on the back burner, Bubba. That's what you signed up for.
Yep.
You know, and sorry, I didn't mean to go on a rant there. But I remember that she hugged me and she goes, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "I tell you what, the first thing what we're going to do is get you some peace, because all of this can be fixed." And she just basically started to cry. And I just stood there with her and I said, "See, we can fix this and we can fix this and we can fix this." And all of this came in building materials and they still make all of it. We can get it fixed.
Right.
And I probably wrote a really crappy claim, to be perfectly honest with you. And I know that I was so out of sorts and I was just taking pictures of everything completely and totally disorganized. I didn't know which way was up or down and whether I was on the front elevation or the right. Every time I saw something bad, I just took a picture of it. And it was probably the worst photo journal ever, ever. And I know it wasn't good because I remember looking at it when I got back going, "This is the worst photo journal ever." And just, it made so much sense when I was standing there. And I just hope that she got taken care of, because I know she probably deserved a lot better than I was on that day. But, you know,
I would say another.
Yeah. So I'll quit rambling. I'm sorry.
Another bad. Because I definitely struggle with this, is especially if you're licensed in multiple states. I'm no longer licensed in multiple states, but if you were, it's even
congratulations,
harder.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks. it's remembering all of the regulatory statutes and even code and things like that when you're estimating. It's, you know, keeping up to date can be challenging, especially because the claims environment is changing very fast.
Yeah.
And sometimes sure. It's right before a hurricane. Sometimes it's right after. I mean, we've seen that 2 years in a row where there have been, you know, the complete overhaul and change in the way claims happen. And then it's like, oh, and then a hurricane hits.
Yeah. Or, and then they call emergency sessions to right. change the laws.
Emergency sessions. Exactly. Yeah. And then they're like, it won't take effect this year, but it'll take effect, you know, for the next year, you know, or right. renewals or whatever.
Keeping
up with that's tough.
In fact, I feel like you're referring quite a bit to Florida. And I'll be honest with you, I let my Florida license go for that very reason, basically because the laws in the state were not something that I felt like I could counsel and advise around. Do you know what I mean? Like I had right. such issue with the ethic of the law. Do you know what I mean? I took such issue with that. Now, you boys out there working in Florida, I mean, I commend you because it is an ever-shifting landscape and you're just not in control of it. And so that is one of the bad things about doing this is that you have to be ready for it to change, and it will break your ankles because it'll change so quick.
That one time in Kentucky, didn't they like cap PAs at 5% or yeah, I don't
all
know.
All of a sudden, like those people didn't need to make a living anymore. You know what yeah. I'm saying? Like it was, I mean, that, and that was a huge win for the carriers. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's in the Bill of Rights that somebody can hire a public adjuster here in Texas, and they cap us at 10%. You know, I think one of the bad things about what we do is fee caps. I mean, I really think that you should be able to charge, you know, whatever you want to charge. But look, I get it. I completely understand it. We don't want to ever hurt the claim, you know, and sometimes, you know, it can foster some misrepresentation in the value of a claim too, you know, but that could work either way. You know, it's really kind of hard to say how it goes, but I appreciate the state that I work in. I think we've got some really, really good laws. Unfortunately, I wish we had more access to them. And so that's my bad. That's one of the bad things as a public adjuster. Literally, you are a service provider that has very little authority. I did not say no. I just said very little authority. You have the ability to leverage that policy. But at the end of the day, if they're not paying attention to it, there's nothing that you can do to make them. Do you know what I mean? And so they can basically, for lack of a better expression, just take their marbles and go home, you know, and if they don't want to deal with you. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't consequences for that, but we don't get to inflict any consequence for the bad behavior. And I think that that's probably one of my bads as we are in a climate where we are having to move into more alternate dispute resolutions, whether it's mediation, you know, and even in situations now where they can deny some of these appraisal requests by homeowners, you know, and or contractors or whatever the case may be. I really like most of the language in Texas, again, not to just ring their bell all night long, but, you know, basically any party can demand it. And it's binding no matter who demands it or wins it. You know what I mean? And so those are all really good things, I think, about Texas. But the fact that we even have to go to appraisal once you have absolutely proven the loss, I think is ridiculous. I think that is terrible. Yes. And it seems to be on purpose.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I don't know if I'm basing some of the carrier's current behavior off of their older behavior, right? So it was what used to pass as a, you know, full roof replacement is no longer passing. And so what we thought we were buying when we bought a policy is not what we're buying now. Even what we bought and we paid for years has now changed based on your interpretation and your financial standing. Right. And so one of the major carriers that probably that I would tell you that carries the majority of the market share in the country got down, their financial rating went from like an A plus down to a B. And that's not a good sign, guys. That's really not good, because as much as I hate battling with insurance companies, when they're being more profitable, they're also more pliable. They're not as tight. You know, so when we start squeezing these insurance companies and we turn and these frivolous claims or frivolous lawsuits get filed and paid, you know what I mean? It is making it harder. So if we have a healthy insurance company, generally we have a more pliable one, because I really hate the climate we're in now, where we're either having at a minimum go to appraisal, or even worse, we have to go settle it in the courts when it's a really simple document.
Stupid simple. Yes.
You know what I mean? And another one of the bads in the same line is that the desk adjusters that I encounter most commonly, I'm not going to say all the time, but most commonly that I encounter, are never really looking or wielding the policy properly. It appears that they're not as well trained. And I think that that's one of the really bad things that you see. This isn't just complaining about the carrier. Sometimes just this whole adversity thing that I don't feel like needs to exist. And I think that that's really the bad thing for me.
That, and I think an unpredictable workload. Like, you do have that flexibility, which is the good part. And it is recession proof, which is a good part. But your workload is very unpredictable. You may be in high demand following a hailstorm for like 3 or 4 months, and then nothing for several months. I mean, it's if you need that structured, that paycheck every 2 weeks, that kind of thing, you know, PAing may not be for you.
Yeah. I have another bad thing. When you know the money's coming, you're just waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
for 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean,
sometimes it's 3 years.
You're expecting to get paid in April. You know what I mean? And so you send in the request for information and you're okay, we're close to a settlement. And then for whatever reason, it gets drug out to October or November, still even after that. You know what I mean? And it's like, when you think it should be paying any day now, it could still really be 30, 60, 90, 120 days before that actually pays out.
Yeah. Especially if it's a monitored claim where the mortgage company's on the check and it's a monitored claim. Oh, geez.
That's why I try to sell my clients on paying me, you know, and it's a sales pitch. It's a sales pitch. And sometimes it's hard, you know, but when you settle a $120,000 claim and they send that check out to you, here's your $120,000. You feel like, yes, that is a great payday. And then the mortgage company takes it and it's like, we're gonna release 10. And so now you're getting $1,000 a month for the next 10 months. And it's like, that's not really what I wanted to do with my money. You know, with the $12,000 I've gotten, that's not how I wanted to use that. And, That is definitely one of the bad things is kind of, most people get paid 26 times a year. We might get paid 6.
Right.
So, well, that'll do it for the bad. And we have saved the ugliest for last. Round 3 starts right after this.
Are you a public adjuster, insurance roofer, or part of the restoration industry looking to streamline your first-party claims process? Let me introduce you to ClaimWizard, the ultimate tool that transforms the way you handle claims. ClaimWizard is designed with your unique business needs in mind. It offers a comprehensive suite of features that makes managing claims effortless. With its intuitive dashboard, you can easily track and manage every aspect of a claim from initiation to settlement. This powerful platform supports document management, automates workflows, and provides real-time updates, ensuring you stay ahead in the game. At Claim Wizard, they understand the importance of support. That's why they offer unmatched customer service with a team of experts who are always ready to assist you. Whether it's a technical query or guidance on best practices, Team Wizard is there to ensure your experience with Claim Wizard is smooth and efficient. Time is money, especially in the claims industry. Claim Wizard is engineered to maximize efficiency. It streamlines the entire claims process, reducing the time spent on paperwork and administration. This means faster claim resolution, increased customer satisfaction, and ultimately a boost in your business's productivity and profitability. So if you're looking to elevate your claims handling process, Claim Wizard is the solution. Try it today and experience a revolution in claims management. Claim Wizard, revolutionizing claims, handling one claim at a time.
Round three, the ugly. The ugly for me is the stress that comes with it, and the how much, despite what you tell them, the how much that people are really kind of depending on you to be able to do what they believe that you should be able to do. You know what I mean? It gets really, really ugly when no matter how, how much you've done to explain or set expectations, that disappointment that hits them when you lose or you don't recover as much as you thought you should have.
Yeah. What did I hire you for? It's like, dope. Yeah. Misdirected anger. This is your carrier.
Well, because I didn't get enough money. Oh, and I have to pay you now too. Well, that's correct. That's the way that's always the ugly. You know what I mean? That's really ugly. And then another one for me is that, and Jess, I'm sure this has happened to you. Have you ever gone just through like a rash of 2 or 3 days or maybe 5 or 6 conversations with the carrier or something like that, and you were just steady getting your teeth kicked in? And that rejection and that no and that failure takes a toll on you in a way that I cannot even explain.
Yep.
You know, from imposter syndrome setting in on you, you know, those are all really sort of ugly emotions. And that's why I say it's not for the faint of heart. You know, you've got to be pretty, you've got to be pretty self-assured. And it's kind of like, I feel like every public adjuster should probably walk around with the attitude that they're the best public adjuster in the country. You know what I mean? And you got to have a little bit of attitude behind you. You know what I mean? And you certainly have to have a lot of tenacity and perseverance.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That was the word that was in my head. It was like tenacity.
You've got to, right. I mean, you've got to be able to grab a hold of something and not let go of it, no matter how much it is, you know, and no matter what it is. And I think that if you don't have that kind of grit, it can really, even if you do have that kind of grit, it just takes a toll on you. And so I think the rejection that we deal with a lot, breeds a lot of cynicism, you know what I mean? And corruptness that may not really be there, you know what I mean? So I think that's one of the ugly parts of it.
I think kind of a segue from that is the negative public perception of public adjusters.
Oh, that is so ugly.
There's so many contractors that view public adjusters as just like bloodsuckers of a claim. And there's so many stereotypes we have to overcome and narratives that we have to rewrite, because there have been so many bad public adjusters, and the good ones just kind of get buried in the crowd because, you know, it doesn't take very much to go get a license. And there's not a thorough education process or system set up for our profession either. Our profession is just kind of what we make it. We take a class over here and a class over there and a class over
here. It's actually licensure that doesn't at all prepare you. I mean, we should have some sort of, I believe that we need a certification. You know what I mean? Even though what I was saying in round one, how the profession really kind of weeds itself out, you know, kind of weeds itself out and kind of, it'll chew you up and spit you out in a hurry, you know? But I don't disagree. I think that there should be some sort of, but who's going to all agree that this is the standard?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. But and thinking about the public adjusters that don't take any of that, you know, education, and they just check the block, do their little online CEs to keep their license going, but they really don't take it very seriously. There's lots of public adjusters showing up in news articles about, you know, taking claim money from people and moving it over here and doing things over there. And it's just, so there's a lot of negative press about public adjusters, and we have to overcome that. That's an ugly side.
I agree with you. One of the other things that I think is really, really ugly, and it kind of goes hand in hand with kind of what we were talking about, is, you know, the complete lack of oversight, obviously, is kind of one of the things that you were saying, that there's nobody really holding these people's feet to the fire, right?
At least for a couple years. I mean, like you said, they get weeded out after several years, but how much damage is done in those years?
Yeah. And it doesn't, you only have to damage one family, right? Or one property owner. It doesn't take much. One is too many. Right. And I'm not talking about the mistakes or the errors that we can make with the good intentions. I'm talking about the people who were not acting in the best interest of their client. That's really kind of what I'm talking about. And finally, kind of to walk that back is one of the I wish we had more unity. And I think our lack of unity, the fact that I'm members of Facebook groups that has more members than any one of our national organizations that are out there, you know, everybody's got their different club and organization. And I think all of them, most of the ones that I have run across, I think are all fantastic. I think they're all doing a great job. I'm not downplaying any one of them. And I know that they all have these different focuses. And I think I saw a video from Jack Hanks where they were talking about like the billions of dollars that carriers dump into lobbying. Mm-hmm. And what we fund for lobbying is so fractional and infinitesimal in comparison. I mean, it's no wonder that we're in the position that we're in. And even if we all united under one umbrella, I still think that it would be a great big, huge uphill climb. You know, I think even if we did all 100% come together and lobby in each and every place that we needed to lobby in, you know, I'm no lobbyist, but, you know, whatever it was that we were trying to get passed in whatever state or however it is that we banded together in these different states, take Florida, for example, I'm sure there's some public adjusters that would like to see some lobbying done to get laws bent back more towards the consumer rather than to benefit the carrier. Right. You know, and Florida is one of the few laws that puts requirements on public adjusters if they're going to be involved in a claim. They put specific timelines on them. Now, Texas doesn't give me not one single solitary timeline. In fact, it's only, I don't even know that it's required for a homeowner to turn in a proof of loss, but if they hire a public adjuster, they got to turn in a proof of loss. You know, that sort of those sorts of requirements, if and I appreciate that they're trying to at some level monitor public adjusting. You know what I mean? But it is the complete lack of come togetherness that, and I think everybody kind of wants it, but I don't think anybody really wants to pick a leader.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You know,
whether like I kind of agree with that, you know, half of what this guy over here says, but I kind of like what they say over there too. And they don't get along or they don't see eye to eye or whatever.
Yeah. And there is a world of public adjusting that exists that doesn't listen to this podcast, right? There's a world of public adjusting that doesn't get on LinkedIn or Facebook or TikTok or Instagram. There is a world of public adjusting of people out there doing things that exist so far beyond sort of our little, for lack of a better term, storm community that I love. You know what I mean? I love being a part of that community that, you know, whether it's the trade show circuit or the conferences that we go to, that kind of, I love our community. You know what I mean? And I wouldn't trade it for the world. You know what I mean? But there's a world of public adjusting that exists outside of that bubble. You know what I'm saying? And there's a lot to be said for what those guys are doing too. So unity can be a very, very difficult thing when you look at the sheer matchup between the public adjusting side versus the carrier side. Right. So the idea of what we can't do for lack, you know, and I don't want to go as far to say if you can't beat them, join them. You know what I mean? But I do know a few public adjusters that are jumping the fence over to start working as a carrier staff because they're tired of the fight. You know what I mean? I just want
an emotional toll part of it.
Yeah, right. Time. They're exhausted. They're exhausted from the fight. It's like, so yeah, if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing. I might as well get paid on every single claim I work.
Here's another ugly one.
Yep.
Depositions. Depositions are an ugly side of public adjusting that very few talk about. And when you're thrown into one, it is an absolute interrogation. They are trying to break down your character. Half of their questions don't even have anything to do with the claim. And it's perfectly legal to ask wild questions. You know, it's different when you're in a courtroom. And in fact, I've not been in a courtroom, so I'll preface it with that. But I have been told that it's easier to, you know, get on the stand before judge and jury. That in a deposition is where it's ugly. And they try to get every black mark on your record exposed, and they want you to talk about it and embarrass you. And nobody told me about that. I mean, where's the training on that? We need some training as PAs for depositions, because those are ugly. They can be very ugly.
I'm going to tell you, Chris, when we did the Rumble podcast on depositions or preparing for depositions, I know that we discussed it at some level. I remember Chris Corville said that there are people that do courses on it. So if you're friends with Chris on Facebook, reach out to him. I'm sure he is more than happy to pass that information on to you. I do know that he is involved with somebody that's educating on depositions. I have not seen a lot of other training offers out there, but I'm aware that he does. Chris Corville, he is, the name of his company, I think, is IEC. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is it Interior Environmental Consultants like that? IEC. So if you want to reach out to him, Chris Corville, he is also one of the board members of United Claims Professionals. I know that he knows somebody that can get you in front of
it. I mean, Cal and Sean Hodge and Cal Spoon, it is part of Public Adjuster Bootcamp. They do a mock. They pick somebody in the class and they do kind of a mock. But so there was a little exposure. You're like, oh, okay. You know, this is what it could look like. But it's a different ballgame when you're the one thrown into it.
Yeah, because when you're playing with live rounds, right? You know what I mean? When you're playing with live rounds, it's just different. And I'm going to tell, because I've got a colleague right now that's involved. I don't know if she's in it as the, I know she's, I don't know. I think she's a hired expert by the attorney, and that's the role that she's playing. And she called and asked me, and she's like, he's asking me all these questions. I said, the reason they want to know if you've written any books or any blogs is because the op-ed that they're going to do on you, they're actually going to go out, they're going to research you, they're going to look for any article, any podcast, anything that you have ever done as a contents person, and they are going to try to trip you up in that deposition. Yep. They're going to, because if they can play a clip from a podcast where you said one thing and now it appears that you say something completely different, they'll discredit you like that.
Yep.
And so
same with depositions. They'll pull up other depositions that you've done.
Yeah. They'll throw that at you. Yeah. And so getting into depositions can be really ugly. And so, you know, if you're a public adjuster, I would argue that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when you get called into one. I think that, you know, as an adjuster, whether you're an independent adjuster, public adjuster, the likelihood of you getting pulled into one, I was pulled into my first deposition, you know, when I was an independent adjuster, and it was on Hurricane Irma. And that was the first time that I got pulled into one. And so it's likely to happen. you know, and it's not a bad thing to have at least had some exposure to it, because as much as they'll try to prep you for it, it's not always really, nothing can prepare you for that moment when you sit down and the court reporter starts tapping away. Trust me, there is a sobriety that is in that room that I cannot even begin to explain to you. So,
yeah. So when, you know, Big Mo, my brother from another mother, from Cass Claims, when he passed away, it was, the judge basically said, look, for the next 90 days, any of these depositions that would have been done by Big Mo, we need somebody else in the seat. And so me being a former member of Cass, they said, would you mind doing it? I said, nope, I don't mind at all. Whatever I can do to help. I had 9 depositions in 90 days. It was nuts. It was absolutely, I messed up so much left and right. We definitely need some training.
So, yeah, I think that kind of, I mean, just, I am so thankful for the guys that are out there that are training. You know what I mean? Thank you so much for all that you do to try to educate our profession. I wish that there was more available. I wish there was stuff that was more standardized. I wish that there was, you know, an actual course that people could take. But that being said, you know, one last little thought as I ring the bell, you know, remember when we said we would get into, you know, the good part is, you know, you get to help people, and the ugly part can also be, remember, you got in this to help people. And so sometimes that can get really ugly too. So I just wanted to kind of circle back there. This is kind of what you signed on for, but, you know, I think all in all that being a public adjuster is a lot of fun. It is a lot of stress. It is never dull or boring, you know.
No.
If you have issues,
that's an understatement.
If you have issues with feeling wanted, become a public adjuster, and you have no idea how wanted you will be at that point in time. So sometimes even when you don't want anybody to know you exist on the planet anymore, just like, leave me alone. But I find it incredibly noble. I find it fulfilling. I think being a public adjuster, despite the bad and the ugly portions of it, the good far outweighs it, you know. And I'm going to get up in the morning and work claims tomorrow. You know, and I'm going to do that the following morning. And I think it's one of the greatest professions that, if you've got the skill set to do it, it's one of the best things that you can do. And I find it a privilege to be able to practice the profession of public adjusting. It is a fantastic job. Any final thoughts, Jess?
Nope,
she's got nothing. She's got nothing, baby cakes.
Nothing.
Well, I guess that's going to do it, guys. If you liked what you heard, please go ahead and click like and subscribe. And if you know somebody that needs to hear this, please don't forget to share it with them. We always welcome your comments, your thoughts, your feedback in the comments below. You can hit us up on our Facebook page at The Pain of the Claim Presents on Facebook. It is also the name of the YouTube channel. And we will be back next week. And in the meantime, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And we will see you on the next one.
Yes, we're coming up. Don't even try to diminish it. I won't start it, but I damn sure will finish it.